Chapter 12. The Ancients Behind the Veil. The DNA evidence presented in Part 3 reveals an astonishing anomaly. At some point during the Ice Age, perhaps as early as 13,000 years ago, a group of people carrying Australo-Melanesian genes settled in what is now the Amazon jungle. The Amazon Basin today is a vast and diverse region, encompassing almost 7 million square kilometers, of which approximately 5.5 million square kilometers are still covered by rainforest. The figures only become meaningful by comparison. The whole of India, with a total area of 3.29 million square kilometers, is less than half the size of the Amazon Basin, but Australia, at 7.7 million square kilometers, is bigger, as are China, 9.59 million square kilometers, Canada, 9.98 million square kilometers, the United States, 9.63 million square kilometers, and Europe, 10.18 million square kilometers. All in all, then, it's fair to say that what the Amazon confronts us with is a truly gigantic landmass, on a similar scale to many of the world's largest countries and regions, extending for thousands of kilometers from north to south and thousands of kilometers from east to west. There has been no lasting scholarly consensus on the climate, environment, vegetation, and tree cover of the Ice Age Amazon. Listen to Appendix 3 for details. But the situation is possibly even worse around the issue of the peopling of this immense region, and indeed around the entire vexed question of how and when humans began to settle in South America as a whole. The listener will recall from Part 2 that it was Tom Dillehay, professor of anthropology at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee, who first put the cat among the Clovis pigeons with his excavations at Monte Verde in southern Chile. The excavations began in 1977 and continue to this day, with multiple reports and papers published in scientific journals. The story is therefore a long one, but to make it short, let's just say that Dillehay's extensive and meticulous excavations initially revealed, in his own words, one valid human site, MV2, dated to around 14,500 calendar years before the present. Although bifacial projectile points, flaked debitage, and grinding stones were recovered, most lithic tools were edge-trimmed pebble flakes and sling and grooved bowler stones. Seen through the distorting lens of the Clovis First belief system, Dillehay's date looked very threatening, in part because the artifacts, tools, and points found at Monte Verde had nothing to do with Clovis whatsoever, but more so because to have reached the far south of South America by 14,500 years ago meant that the ancestors of these settlers must have crossed the Bering land bridge, the full length of two continents away, long before that, and therefore, by definition, that Clovis was very far indeed from being first. All Dillehay's battles with Vance Haines and his supporters were over this relatively conservative date of 14,500 years ago. And as we've heard, Monteverdi was vindicated in that fight, after a site visit in 1997 when the Clovis Firsters begrudgingly conceded defeat. But the story was far from over, and as the excavations at Monte Verde continued, deeper and older occupation levels began to be exposed, yielding increasingly more ancient dates. The results of these new studies were published by Dillehay in November 2015, confirming a revised age for Monte Verde of around 18,500 years, and revealing that the site had been reoccupied several times thereafter over a period of more than 4,000 years. Again, in Dillehay's own words, the new evidence is multiple, spatially discontinuous, low-density occurrences of stratigraphic in-situ stone artifacts, faunal remains, and burned areas that suggests discrete horizons of ephemeral human activity radiocarbon dated between around 14,500 and possibly as early as 19,000 calendar years before the present. Nor, it seems, is Monteverde quite done with surprising us. Even as he was reporting his first paradigm-busting date of 14,500 years ago for MV2, Dillehay was already drawing attention, in a rather careful, non-committal way, to the possibility that MV1, another area of the site, might be older and not just 18,500 or 19,000 years old, but perhaps significantly more than 30,000 years old. MV1 dated around 33,000 years before the present, initially defined by scattered occurrences of three clay-lined, possible culturally produced burned areas and 26 stones, at least six of which suggest modification by humans. This evidence from MV1 was too meager and too laterally discontinuous to falsify or verify its archaeological validity. This whole issue, which even the most adamant Clovis Firsters on the 1997 site visit had admitted was extremely intriguing, was re-examined by Dillehay and his team in the 2015 study across several areas of Monteverde. Dates as tantalizingly ancient as 43,500 years ago were associated with the remains and artifacts unearthed, but Dillehay again carefully judged the finds to be still too meager and inconclusive to determine whether they represent human activity or indeterminate natural features. At present, the latter case is perhaps more feasible, given there is presently no convincing archaeological or other data to substantiate a human presence in South America prior to 20,000 years ago. One more line in the sand crossed. Despite having for so long been a rebel on the subject of first Americans, despite having been vindicated in the end on his first date for Monteverde, despite having then published new dates pushing the age of the site back further, and despite those meager hints of even greater antiquity, it does sound very much as if Dillehay was imitating his former critics here, just as they used to argue that there was no convincing archaeological evidence to substantiate a human presence in South America 14,500 years ago. Now he was saying there was none prior to 20,000 years ago. When, I wonder, will archaeologists take to heart the old dictum that absence of evidence is not the same thing as evidence of absence, and learn the lessons that their own profession has repeatedly taught, namely that the next turn of the excavator's spade can change everything. So little of the surface area of our planet has been subjected to any kind of archaeological investigation at all that it would be more logical to regard every major conclusion reached by this discipline as provisional, particularly so when we're dealing with a period as remote, as tumultuous, and as little understood as the Ice Age. I was therefore not at all surprised, after Dillehay had drawn his line in the sand at 20,000 years ago, that later research, published in August 2017, confirmed a human presence in South America even earlier in the Ice Age. This followed decades of study by a team under the leadership of Denis Vialou of the Muséum National d'Histoire Naturelle in Paris at the Santa Elena Rock Shelter in the Brazilian state of Mato Grosso. Located at the convergence of two major river basins and roughly at the geographic center of South America as a whole, the shelter is known for its huge display of around 1,000 prehistoric paintings and drawings. In the long rectangular habitation area nearby, Vialou found and excavated a series of beautifully stratified deposits testifying to different periods of human occupation from 27,600 years ago down to 23,000 years ago. Some very finely worked and drilled bone ornaments were among the objects discovered. Pedra Furada. More than 2,000 kilometers northeast of Santa Elena, the eminent archaeologist Niede Guidon has spent 40 years excavating hundreds, literally hundreds, of richly painted prehistoric rock shelters in Serra da Capivara National Park in the Brazilian state of Piauí. While everyone else is playing catch-up, she has long been confident that humans arrived in South America much earlier than 20,000 years ago. In 1986, 3 years before Dillehay first began to offer his own cautious descent from the Clovis First paradigm, she published a paper in Nature boldly titled Carbon-14 Dates Point to Man in the Americas 32,000 Years Ago. It was a report on her work at a particularly large and richly decorated rock shelter called Pedra Furada, where she had excavated a sequence containing abundant lithic industry and well-structured hearths at all levels, documenting continuous human occupation over the entire period from 6,160 years ago to 32,160 years ago. In addition, she found conclusive evidence that at least one of the spectacular rock paintings was 17,000 years old. This pictograph indicates the practice of rupestral art, in other words, rock art, at that time, and makes the site of Pedra Furada the most ancient rupestral art site known in America and one of the most ancient in the world. But that was just the beginning, and in 2003, Guidon and other researchers completed a further study. The results pushed back the date of the human presence at Pedra Furada to 48,500 years ago, and of the paintings themselves to at least 36,000 years ago. Most archaeologists, particularly North American archaeologists, still partially under the spell of Clovis I, have not embraced Guidon's interpretation of the evidence at Pedra Furada. This, however, does not mean that she is wrong, only that she's willing to think and thoroughly investigate outside the box. She's an acerbic critic of what she calls the climate of skepticism attending old dates that has haunted American archaeology for so long, and of the unquestioning acceptance of Beringia as the only realistic route for human entry to the New World. Guidon does not see any reason why Beringia should have been the only route of entry. Everybody is willing to give humans the abilities necessary for voyaging across to Australia about 60,000 years ago. Why then would it have been impossible for them to pass from island to island along the Aleutians, just as one example? We have no justification for converting the humans who peopled the Americas to a single state of being, where they could do nothing but follow herds by a land route. In another paper, anticipating the speculations of geneticists like Skoglund, Reich, and Willislev by more than a decade, she goes even further, reminding us of the puzzling cranial morphology of certain ancient Brazilian skulls, reviewed later in Appendix 1, and concluding that although little probable, the possibility of migration from Australia and surrounding islands across the Pacific Ocean more than 50,000 years ago cannot be discarded. Hidden realms. It is in the Amazon basin that the oddly misplaced Australasian genetic signal beats out its enigmatic pulse. As well as being very far indeed from Australia and Papua New Guinea, however, neither Monte Verde, nor Santa Helena, nor Pedra Furada are in the Amazon basin, though the latter two are closer than the former, being respectively about 515 kilometers and 625 kilometers as the crow flies from the Xingu River, a major southeastern tributary of the Amazon. The long-standing but now thoroughly discredited archaeological model, whereby the Amazon was supposedly uninhabited by humans during the Ice Age and remained so until less than 1,000 years ago, inevitably had a chronic impact on research priorities and research funding. The result, relative to its importance in global ecology and its enormous land area, is that very little archaeology has been done in the Amazon basin at all, and very little of what has been done, truly a tiny fraction, focuses on Ice Age occupation levels. A refreshing exception, however, is the work of the ever-open-minded Anna Cortinius Roosevelt, currently Professor of Anthropology at the University of Illinois, whom we encountered in Chapter 11. On April 19, 1996, she and a group of co-researchers took to the pages of Science to publish the results of their study of Pedra Pintada, another beautifully painted rock shelter in Brazil, but this time located right in the heart of the Amazon basin, at the confluence of the Tapajos and Amazon rivers. Here, Roosevelt and her team excavated multiple occupation layers spanning the Holocene, our current era, and the late Pleistocene, the Ice Age, with the oldest and deepest turning out possibly to be as old as 16,000 years, according to thermoluminescence dating, and 14,200 years, according to radiocarbon dating. Conclusion? The human presence in Caverna de Pedra Pintada during the late Pleistocene is established by numerous artifacts. The dated materials are associated in stratigraphic context at the beginning of a long cultural sequence. There is no pre-human biological material that could have mixed with the cultural remains, which are stratigraphically separated from later Holocene assemblages by a culturally sterile layer. The discovery of Paleo-Indians along the Amazon confirms earlier evidence that the Paleo-Indian radiation was more complex than current theories provide for. Indeed so, and even in these days of man-made ecological disaster, let us remind ourselves that 5.5 million square kilometers of the Amazon basin is still covered by rainforest. To put that in perspective, picture Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, and El Salvador. Taken together, they encompass 2.22 million square kilometers, not nearly enough. So we will need to add on India with its 2.97 million square kilometers to get an imaginary realm almost equivalent in size to the Amazon rainforest. My point here is that when we consider the Amazon as an archaeological project, its scale is comparable to Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, El Salvador, and India, all added together, and all, in addition, entirely covered by dense rainforest, and therefore difficult and expensive to access. Moreover, unlike Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, and El Salvador, where the famous Maya civilization flourished, and unlike India, with its ancient cities and temples, there was, as we've heard, no inducement for archaeologists to invest scarce time and money on excavations in the Amazon while it was believed that nothing of great interest would be found there. At the close of the second decade of the 21st century, no serious archaeologists are still thinking that way. The state of affairs they've inherited, however, means that huge swathes of the Amazon, encompassing millions of square kilometers, have never been subject to any kind of archaeological investigation at all. This is a wider problem than the Amazon. For example, sea level rose 120 meters when the Ice Age came to an end, with the result that 27 million square kilometers of land that was above water at the last glacial maximum 21,000 years ago is underwater today. These submerged continental shelves were prime seafront real estate during the Ice Age, yet only a few tiny slivers of them have ever been subject to any kind of marine archaeological investigation. Again, this is because, like the Amazon, access requires special preparations, equipment, and transportation, and also because of a similar belief that whatever would be found as a result of these costly investigations would not add greatly to what is already known. I'll say nothing about Antarctica, with its 14 million square kilometers, entirely virgin to the archaeologist's spade. The almost universal agreement that humans could never have lived there in the past might or might not be correct, but we'll never know for sure unless we look. We do know that the Sahara Desert, presently occupying an area of about 9 million square kilometers, had a very different climate during the Ice Age and in the early millennia of the Holocene than it experiences today, and that there were long periods when it was well-watered and fertile, with extensive lakes and grasslands and abundant wildlife. It is near enough to Egypt and the other great centers of early civilization in North Africa and the Middle East to have attracted the attention of archaeologists, but like the Amazon and like the submerged continental shelves, access is difficult and expensive, placing serious practical limits on what can be achieved. Part of our predicament, therefore, as a species with amnesia, is that huge areas of the planet that we know for sure were used by and lived upon by our ancestors, the submerged continental shelves, the Sahara Desert, the Amazon rainforest, have, for a variety of practical and ideological reasons, been badly served by archaeology. The truth is, we know very little about the real prehistory of any of these places. And the tiny patches that have thus far been surveyed and excavated within them are no legitimate basis upon which to draw conclusions and express certainties about the vast areas that remain unsurveyed and unexcavated. Guatemala in Central America was one of the six countries I suggested we put together to envisage the scale of the Amazon rainforest. Guatemala itself encompasses just under 109,000 square kilometers. It's an indication of how pointless it is to take any so-called facts about the past for granted, however, that even in this tiny country, 50 times smaller than the Amazon, a huge archaeological surprise was unveiled in 2018. "Everything is turned on its head," commented Ithaca College archaeologist Thomas Garrison on the results of a survey of 2,100 square kilometers of Guatemala's densely forested northern Petén region. Deploying LIDAR, light detection and ranging, pulsed laser technology, what the survey revealed, in areas quite close to known and even famous and well-visited Mayan sites such as Tikal, were more than 60,000 previously unsuspected ancient houses, palaces, defensive walls, fortresses, and other structures, as well as quarries, elevated highways connecting urban centers, and complex irrigation and terracing systems that would have been capable of supporting intensive agriculture. Previously, scholars had believed that only scattered city-states had existed in an otherwise sparsely populated region, but the LIDAR images make it clear, as Garrison puts it, that scale and population density had been grossly underestimated. Catherine Rees-Taylor, a University of Calgary archaeologist, adds, "After decades of combing through the forests, no archaeologists had stumbled across these sites. More importantly, we never had the big picture that this data gives us. It really pulls back the veil and helps us to see the civilization as the ancient Maya saw it." When pulling back the veil on the relatively recent Maya civilization in a small part of the tiny country of Guatemala can produce so many surprises, we may begin to imagine what big picture might come to light if the vastly larger and more opaque veil that has covered the Amazon rainforest for so long were to be drawn back. Hopefully the interest will be there and the funds made available for it to be drawn back thoroughly, using the latest scanning technologies followed up by site surveys and excavations. Until that happens, however, no archaeologist is in any position to dismiss the possibility that the very old and very troublesome Australo-Melanesian genetic signal that has been detected among Amazonian populations might have gotten there by the most parsimonious route, namely by a direct crossing of the Pacific from Australasia to South America. That in turn would imply a civilization capable of great oceanic voyages and therefore, by definition, at a much more advanced stage of development than archaeologists are prepared to accept for any branch of humanity during the Ice Age.